Welcome to the Inside CCW Safe Podcast with founders Stan Campbell and Mike Darter. If you're forced to fight the battle for your life, CCW Safe will fight the battle for your future.
All right, welcome back to the Inside CCW Safe Podcast. I'm Mike Darter in Oklahoma City, here with Stan.
Hey, Stan Campbell, holding down Las Vegas still, waiting on SHOT Show to begin, waiting on the rest of the troops from CCW Safe to arrive.
Yeah, we get in tomorrow, and I'm here with Kyle Sweet, the General Counsel, here in Oklahoma City.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, Stan's weather any better out there, man? It's got to be warmer.
It is better. It's mild. I'm trying to knock the sun, the clouds back for you guys, so it'll be sun shining when you're arriving.
Keep working it, man.
I'm working it.
It's going to be cold. I think it's going to be pretty cold here this weekend. I think it's not as bad as what they were saying originally. But anyways, we're going to have a lot of good stuff out there. We did our last podcast with Justin Collett, and that was good to let people get to know him. He's a great guy. We've been working with him, like I said, 3-4 years or so.
Yes,
so,
sir.
We're going to be looking for a lot more content coming out. So that's going to be nice. So today we're going to talk about, you want to kick it off, Stan?
Yeah, you know, today's topic, you know, surrounds stuff that's in the news right now. You know, we had a lot of calls come in from our members from Washington State. They are also jumping on the bandwagon, attacking the NRA and NRA carry guard. It's in the news, so it's no problem for me to talk about that competitor. But the NRA is having a hard time out there. And so, you know, because we had so many questions come in this week as to, you know, the stability of CCW Safe, you know, we wanted to bring in our general counsel, Kyle Sweet, who doesn't have the opportunity to jump on it with us too often, but, you know, just to kind of help answer those questions and kind of to break us down and to talk about the differences and the reason why we're in the places that others are not.
Right.
Well, one of the important things, Stan, I think that when you're talking about regulatory laws and particularly in the context of insurance, you know, words matter. The turn of a word can carry significant importance. And one of the words that you just said that is the foundation for why the model that we have created with significant financial investment and consultation with industry experts is the word member. And you referred to our members as just that, members. They're a member of an association, CCW Safe. And because of that, the word you did not use is equally as important, and that word is insured.
That's right.
And the problem with all of this is what we foresaw coming down the road, which was the NRA felt it was a marketing gimmick to make people think that we, you know, or any other legal services membership plan, that it would really be meaningful to their customer base to try to scare them into saying that you have to have your name as the policy. You have to be the insured of this insurance agreement. And that was their downfall because, the very first thing it did is by saying you got to be the insured NRA member or customer of CarryGuard, by saying that, you now have pigeonholed yourself into obtaining insurance from the commercial market.
That's right.
And the commercial market for insurance, all roads go through London. Because when you buy your insurance policy for whatever insurance you get, it moves through the Lloyd's of London syndicate. And for reinsurance, for excess coverage, for primary policy protection, all of that is sold off by all the different insurance companies and makes its way through there. And therefore, underwriting decisions to determine what is a premium that should be paid, in other words, figuring out what is the risk and how do we monetize a premium dollar to be able to protect for multiple claims in multiple different areas where we're covering this. And Lloyd's has a say. And that drives the extent of coverage from the underwriters, who often are reporting their back, reporting back up to the various syndicate members at Lloyd's. And it minimizes and waters down the coverage that you get. And so you saw that with their policy that they published, that we saw that was underwritten by Chubb, who abandoned the market quickly. But the coverage was a reimbursement only model, because they to make their underwriting masters and reinsurance masters happy in London, they had to water down coverage. Because what we all know in this country is, and it's maybe the reason we left England, but we want our freedoms and we want our ability to have things that we want and don't want to be subject to, you know, a monarchy or a system of government that says that does not recognize the inherent freedoms and inalienable rights that individual citizens have. So that's why many of our ancestors came here. So in any event, long story short, the structure of insurance is determined through Lloyd's. They have a say in it. Now, the only way to get out of that, and we explored this when we first began our company, we wanted to make sure that we had the means with which and the structure to be able to provide for many and multiple simultaneous events that would be considered a large loss event that we're going to cost a lot of money and we're going to require a tremendous amount of resources. And so when you set something like that up, you want to make sure you have you're properly capitalized for that. And you also want to make sure that you have risk mitigation and protections in place to be able to handle that. And so we explored, a relationship with reinsurance to be able to traditional reinsurance model. And it is because it's all going to go through London. You can have a broker here, but the risk determination and the premium will ultimately be significantly influenced by the underwriters at Lloyd's. And that's exactly what happened. We got a price quote for reinsurance that was incredibly not in our favor, and the price point was greater than the cost of our membership. Mm-hmm. So we
and that too is the reason why, you know, the others, you know, when we stepped into the market, that the others were priced so high, and you know,
coverage was so poor.
Absolutely, and we came in as a competitive yet fair price point as to the amount of incidents that occur per year. You know, so we put a lot of thought into, you know, should we jump on the bandwagon like everyone else, or should we really take our time and have a standalone, coverage for our members? And I think we really did a good job. We held our own initially, stepping away from civil liability in the first couple of years until we had the right model, and we just so happened to, you know, get our model set in place a year before the attacks started. And, and I don't know if you remember, Kyle, but I think it was in the fall, it was the last quarter of 2016 when the initial attack on NRA began. And that was with Second Call Defense. That was pretty much the dry run. And that was Second Call Defense at the time, before NRA CarryGuard came about. Second Call Defense is who the NRA endorsed. So they allowed their members to, they pushed it toward their customer base and said that was the direction to go in. And they, too, were set up the same way. But they were attacked and locked in, walked away from them as a broker. And then came about CarryGuard. When CarryGuard came about, they moved away from Second Call Defense, left them on their own. And they began a hard push into the industry. And by that time, we were already set up.
Right, and the thing that we've been saying all along is that and going back to the way we started off, is the words member and the words insured are incredibly important. Mm-hmm. CCW Safe is not just a company; it's also an association where concealed, carriers can obtain information, content, education, training, personal carry development, training and legal instruction on better understanding all the concealed carry variances between states, particularly when traveling. And your benefits are extensive. And having the legal defense in place, as well as liability protection, depending on your membership level, are just some of the services that are provided by your membership in this group. And because of that, there's something called captive insurance, and it's been around for quite a while. Nearly every Fortune 500 company has its own captive insurance company. The vast majority of Fortune 1000 companies have their own captive insurance company. And the reason for this is that it allows you, the expert of your own risk, to manage your risk and to provide the funding mechanism in place that you can control it, where you're not subject to the whims of, political issues. You're not subject to the whims of underwriters and Lloyd's of London. You truly get freedom from the thing that makes insurance expensive and not very extensive. So we wanted to be able to control our own risk. And that's why our CCW Safe established 2A Insurance Company, which is a captive insurance company owned and for the benefit of CCW Safe. CCW Safe is the insured, and 2A is its captive subsidiary. Now, we've also been – and we've been completely transparent with this from day one. Now, when you see the advertising of many of our competitors, to this day – you don't have any idea how they're paying for it. If they have 50 claims that occur at one time, how in the world are they going to pay for it? No one knows, because they won't tell. Some of them try to say, oh, we have an insurance package, or we have a this or that, but they don't actually explain the process that they came to in order to be able to fund the claims that they have. Of course, we believe, after looking at most of their policies and their membership description, is they're really not covering very many things that are all that extensive in coverage, and don't have very many claims with which to talk about. In fact, one of our big competitors tried to steal our claims history and use specific examples in the names of our people who we'd helped and spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to provide lawyers and get them out of jail and all this, and then ultimately get them acquitted of murder charges. Literally ran an ad campaign throughout the United States that could only had one intention, and that was to leave the listener with the impression that either the specifically named member was not a member of any legal services plan, and was subject to personal financial devastation because he didn't have the protection, or that maybe somehow he was a member of theirs. So, yeah. And of course, we had to send, which is, we should probably have him on speed dial. We've had to do this so many times because blatantly misrepresent the extent of our coverage and how we're structured and blah, blah, blah. And so we have some pretty explosive, I'll do a quick tease out. We have some pretty explosive information for people that will be coming out at some point. We have had some people purchase memberships from multiple different of our competitors as well as ourself. And when one of those has an incident, look for some content coming out that'll show you the specific experiences that the client of a lawyer, one of our members who we obtained a lawyer for after a self-defense shooting, had with our competitors, who he also was a member of. And it's I'm going to just leave it there for now. But I say that as an anecdote, that we, having all been in law enforcement and been involved in various capacities in officer-involved shootings, we understand the whole panoply of what is involved. As an attorney, I understand the legalities of it, and as someone who practices in insurance law, Mike and Stan said, find us the solution that works for this. And I had experience with captives and brought this to Mike and Stan. And I can tell you, of every CEO and COO in the country, you won't find any that are more created themselves as more subject matter experts on this topic than Mike and Stan. They continually have sought to improve our captive, strengthen our captive, You know, we have claims committee data that we are transparent with and share with our members for one purpose, and that is to let our members understand the types of ways they can have a consequence for a concealed carry incident, of not just a self-defense incident, but a concealed carry incident, and be their own risk manager and reduce the likelihood of something like that happening to them. You know, that's been a part of our, you know, Mike talks about them a lot, our core values, and they're not just marketing materials. We hold each other to account for the way in which our company and our divisions that we manage within the company meet that stated value. Uh-huh. And so the insurance component that ensures CCW Safe is one that we have sought out, like I said, subject matter experts in the captive industry, and we have retained the best captive managers and mm-hmm. financial managers for the captive, and it is only growing and being more secure and able to meet the needs of our company for as long as we want it. It's a great thing, and we have it organized in a way that allows us to harvest all of the data for claims that can then be used for educational purposes like I described, and it really works for us. And since it works for us, it works for all of our members as well. And so that's basically right. The structure of how, you know, we're not in the insurance business. We are not selling anyone a policy. And the model that some of our competitors tried to set up, in this instance, the NRA, is blown up in their face because they, as a marketing gimmick, they wanted to try to make people think it's important that you yourself are listed in a policy, and that's what blew up in their face. Then they had to be they're subjecting themselves to the regulatory aspects in states that are not favorable to the firearms industry, and particularly to the NRA. And, you know, the NRA has been very controversial forever, and even more so in recent years, even amongst gun owners. And I know that you guys talked about that with Justin Collette on the last podcast, and I wholeheartedly agree with that. It has been. And it's an organization that has changed, some say not for the better. And then with the financial data released over what their executives are paying themselves and what they're paying marketing companies to scare people into sending more money, meanwhile they're capitulating to executive branch attacks on individual freedoms of gun owners, regardless of what you think about, you know, essentially cosmetic or entertainment devices on a weapon like a bump stock. That's not the point. The point is they apparently capitulated to the executive branch wanting to change your individual freedoms and rights by executive caveat. And that's the issue. That's the issue that I think has ultimately cost them a lot of their foundational members, is they feel that they're doing that for self-preservation rather than to really protect your liberties. So in any event, that's kind of all of that in a nutshell. The other thing I wanted to mention is I wanted to kind of let people know some interesting talking points about this issue. When you hear historically that the reason that the baseline of what people are using in the regulators and saying the NRA can't have their insurance in Lockton and the other companies is because it's a historic public policy not to allow people to insure against intentional acts. And that's true, particularly in the criminal context. But in the criminal context, no insurance company is going to pay pay a liability. In other words, pay a fine or pay a criminal judgment. Okay, that is a violation of public policy. So the regulators are essentially using some excuses, I believe, to circumvent that just to attack someone for political reasons. But here's the public policy reason I think that's so important for the way we've structured ours. We have civil liability protection for people who have had to make a decision to defend themselves, and that is a judgment. That's a judgment that you make. And this is we're not talking about the criminal context of self-defense, which is an absolute right. It is a defense that one claims, and if you claim it, you have to meet certain types of elements of your affirmative defense. And some states, those are different because of things like the Castle Doctrine and Make My Day and Stand My Ground. Those are all, you know, basically riffing on the concept of the longstanding common law right of self-defense. But what we're talking about now is the civil liability protection. And to me, it is incredibly irresponsible for one of our regulators or a legislator to argue against a responsible gun-owning citizen to protect not only themselves by having a civil liability plan, but protecting someone they may make a mistake against. You know, none of us are perfect. We're all human beings. That we all have to have car insurance because cars can be dangerous. All of us who drive have made a mistake and made a judgment mistake. And we were going too fast. We didn't slow down in time. We bang into somebody else. And the whole concept of having a liability plan as a membership benefit that protects you, it's not just for your benefit. It's it also the person who you may accidentally injure by poor judgment or wrong information should have a right of recovery against the tortfeasor. So if it's me and I make a mistake and someone comes up to me and asks me what time it is and I see them reaching in their hand for their cell phone and I don't hear them properly because I'm old and and I plug a hole in them, that person should have a right to recover against me, right? Mm-hmm. I made a mistake. Now, I can claim from a criminal standpoint, you know, I claim self-defense and the district attorney may say, Kyle, I agree with you. You know, based on what you had at the time, it was reasonable for you to do that. And I don't think I can meet the very, very high burden of proof that I have as a prosecutor to bring a criminal case against you. But the civil case is more probably true than not. In other words, 51% to 49%. You know, plaintiff lawyers like to put their hands out like a scale and say, one more piece of paper on my side, you know, one more feather, and I win. Okay, well, that being true, if that's a correct reflection of the burden of proof that a plaintiff has, then shouldn't there be a financial way to compensate the injured person? And I believe that there is. And so, and it's in all of our it's in our collective best interest as gun owners. And to me, it's an absolute should be a requirement of us. As part of our regimen of things we do to be responsible gun owners, have a good holster, have a good belt, have had some training, have a concealed carry permit, you know, be in somewhat decent physical condition that you can retain that weapon, and also have a membership plan that encompasses protection for you if you're involved in a criminal incident, if administratively someone tries to take action against your license, and civilly as well. So that's we built it. We built the thing we wanted that we enjoyed as police officers, and citizens who have the right to carry should have the exact same thing, in our opinion. That's why we built the company the way we did. And ultimately, when somebody's injured in a shooting, it's usually typically expensive medical records. They should have a right to pay for those. You know, it's ultimately it's a society cost that is diminished by a responsible gun owner having a membership that provides for civil liability as well. It's in all of our collective best interest.
That's right. You want to add something, Mike, before I jump back in?
Well, I was just going to make a couple points. You know, he brought up the fact that one of our members had coverages with other companies as well, and that's actually common. I don't know. I don't think it's real common, but we do have a lot of members that have that spend a lot of money that's unnecessary on other plans. And when you look at these plans, you know, you're talking about on the higher end. If you look at some of the competitors, $400 or $500, and then you have our plan, and then another plan, that gets to be pretty expensive. So that is something that people do, and I think it's, you know, it's unnecessary. I know it might make them feel better, but do you want to, you know, just feel better? Or do you want to actually have better coverage?
That's right.
And then
that's a great point.
You know, talking about the civil liability, I want to say that got brought up at one time in the last administration. Am I wrong on that, or do you ever see that coming into a political move?
As far as
requiring insurance?
Obviously, you know, our what would benefit us as a company is transparent in a situation like that.
Yeah.
If any state legislature passed a law that said in conjunction – anytime someone gets a concealed carry permit, they have to have some type of a membership plan that protects the other everyone else in the public. I'm a proponent of that for reasons I just explained. Mm-hmm. But as well, I mean, obviously it would be great, you know, for our business and any of our competitors as well. But I ultimately think it's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do. I mean, if we accept the fact that if you're going to operate a car on our streets, that you have to have evidence of liability insurance. And in order to register your vehicle, you have to have that and show it every single year. And that's something we have all accepted. None of us have been at our respective state capitals protesting, and having Tea Party signs saying, not my car, whatever. But we're going to fuss about getting something that can protect not only ourselves but our family, everything we've worked our whole lives for, and our fellow citizens. I think it's part of, to me, in the context of everyday carry. We'll have people walking around that'll have two tourniquets, two knives, two spare magazines, but they can't foresee the fact that they might be subjecting their life savings to ruin. This is a part of a everyday carry is what we should think of this. Your card, your CCW Safe card, should be part of your EDC.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I just thought I remember at some time in the past that being brought up. I don't think it was ever legislated. I don't think it has ever brought in a actual
proposed bill,
but I do remember there being some discussion. I don't remember. It was back in, I want to say, is sometime around 2000, 14, 15, something like that.
Yeah, what's ironic, and who brought it up? It wasn't pro Second Amendment crowd.
No.
It was anti-Second Amendment crowd because they wanted to feel safer for several reasons, but mostly it was to if they made concealed carriers spend money on some type of a premium or a policy or membership, that may lessen the likelihood that we would have as many as concealed carriers as we do. Right. So it's rather cynical, and it's particularly, to me, massively hypocritical to then have those same people who wanted to force people to get something like an insurance policy if they're going to carry a concealed weapon, to now, when they do, go out and try to hammer them and attack the people that were providing that. It is what it is. We no longer have political parties. We have sports teams that we root for, and that's just part of it. I mean, we get it, but that's what you can expect. I think at some point, if we could look at this like adults, like we all are, and say, what can we do as gun owners that is in the benefit of non-gun owners to show them that we're acting as responsibly as we can. And I think one of the leading examples of that is obtaining something that is a protection for yourself and your neighbors who may not be into firearms as much as you are.
And we've had New York, Cuomo brought that on New York, and when he asked other states to follow, we now have California has followed, New Jersey has followed. Washington. I think we're going to see that to be a trend in 2019 and on. I think that's going to be a trend. I think we're going to see other states continue to follow. And, the thing I immediately saw was that the whole argument was that it is illegal to cover illegal intentional acts. And while when we set this up, Kyle, I remember talking when we first, this was, I mean, when we were just talking about this, and we talked about that any attorney for an insurance company is going to argue that pulling the trigger is an intentional act, and that's why we set the company up the way we did. But the way they attacked it, I just, they didn't say an intentional act. They said an illegal intentional act. And,
yes.
Anywhere in the country, in all 50 states, as far as I'm aware, you have the right to defend yourself if somebody's trying to harm you or your family. So it really had that spin on it that was not, that was not right in my mind. And in probably everybody else's mind as well. But the fact of it is that we now have New York, New Jersey, California, Washington, and other states, most likely to follow. So, Stan, did we have do you have some specific questions that have come in? Because I know we've had questions on this in the past.
Well, talking in short, it always makes the our members, you know, take a pause when they see these other organizations being attacked and and you know their coverage being called murder insurance. But you know, of course, that's always you know pushed out as you know the political anti-gun you know campaign to go against the NRA specifically.
Right.
And then they also say any other companies like it. You know, for instance, you know, some of the questions that might come up is, you know, I thought I already had, you know, civil coverage.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah,
I always like to remind everybody that, you know, all of our subscription plans are covered with criminal defense and civil defense at no cap. All these other companies, they've chose to cap theirs off. We, because of our experience in law enforcement, we knew that you cannot put a cap on criminal defense because you don't know how much it's going to cost.
And what that means, just to be clear for people, because this is the big question, they don't understand that the criminal defense is different from the criminal liability. And the criminal defense is the actual defense of the criminal trial portion, which if you have a civil lawsuit against you, then we're going to cover all attorneys, experts, investigators, discovery, you know, consultants, everything that needs to be done for that civil case. That is covered on every membership.
That's right. That's standard with CCWC. Mm-hmm. And, you know, many of our competitors, you know, they didn't understand why we would do that. And we do it because we understood that you absolutely need to be covered this way, because if you have a plan, even especially for those who have multiple plans right now, and you know, understand this, if you have a plan that stops at $250,000 or stops at $500,000, but it also draws away from, it's like a wasting policy, it draws away from
the liability
portion,
all the
other areas that you get benefits, you know, it starts to, you know, deplete, and you end up having, you know, at the end of the day, when you pay, you know, $50,000 for, you know, to get out of jail, $100,000 for in a standard for a murder case, you know, against you.
And that's called a wasting. There's also called a wasting or diminishing policy, and that's, I think, what you're
saying.
And the thing is, it appears some of the policies do have that, because if you have a diminishing policy, insurance companies like certainty. All right, and in litigation, certainty is kind of tough to come by. So the way they obtain certainty in litigation is to say, we will never have more than $1 million at risk in this case. If the lawyer bills us $800,000 and we spend $199,000 in costs, guess what? You got $1.
You got one, yeah.
And so that, to us, that is just – that's on borderline fraudulent practically. I mean, people don't read the fine print and they don't understand. They think, I got $1 million in coverage and I've got – defense, and I've got – you don't. For us, you do. We have and one of the ways we do that is I wish our members could see behind the scenes, and I know we've described it in some of the content we put out on the Maddox case, but when we have a case that's in litigation, and we have them almost constantly, every week Stan and I get on the call with Don West. And even if it's a civil or criminal case, we're both involved. And occasionally we involve Mike. Mm-hmm. And we discuss the pending litigation claims. And we communicate regularly and frequently with the lawyers who are doing work for us. In fact, they're subject to what's called defense counsel guidelines, which it mandates communication. And the reason it mandates communication are we – self-defense cases in the criminal context are not all that necessarily common because a lot of them don't get to trial. They get pled out. But what we – and Don West being the nation's preeminent expert on trying, you know, large-scale, massive media coverage self-defense cases, we know what to expect. We know the type of – work that should be done. We know the type of resources the lawyers need, and we are always communicating with them, and we're not bitching at them saying, hey, you spent $47 last month obtaining copies of the medical bills. We call them and say, hey, where are the medical bills? You know, there's 25 doctors listed in the medical bills, why haven't you obtained all of their medical records? You know, because we know that the more information that we have that we can make accessible to our panel attorneys who are defending our member, that the better off chance we got. And we want to always over-resource our lawyers in comparison to the other side, and the other side being a DA or a plaintiff's lawyer. We always make sure that the lawyer with the most preparation and most resources typically is going to have the best chance of winning. And
that's right.
Ultimately, that's all that this is about, is we cannot look ourselves in the mirror at the conclusion of a case, and we have never had to say to ourselves, we probably could have spent a little bit more money on an expert, or we probably should have got a better expert, or we probably should have done this or that. We know that we've done everything that we could possibly do.
And that was evident in the Maddox case, which, by the way, people don't know, that was the, you know, we had, that's the only case in the industry of a self-defense murder one case that's gone to a full trial and a full acquittal or a full not guilty verdict.
Yeah, it was several weeks long for the trial and many—
Two-year process.
Yeah, two-year process. And just in the pretrial phase, one thing it's important is we possess a lot of subject matter expertise on these areas. In some areas, we don't. And in the areas we don't, we go out and we hire the people who know the most about it. And just as an example in the Maddox case, we had two other categories of expert witnesses that we had paid tens of thousands of dollars to mm-hmm. review the case and get prepared to testify in the event we thought we would need them. Now, in a case, whether criminal or civil, the defendants do not have the burden of proof unless it's on an affirmative defense. And in the Maddox case, we had people who were prepared to testify on various topics, and we did not wind up needing them. And rather than say, well, gosh, guys, we've already spent $35,000 on these two experts, let's go ahead and just have them get on the stand. Now, we trust the lawyers that we have, and we have boots on the ground, and we had Don West in the courtroom, and we had Gary Eastridge in the courtroom, and monitoring the trial and reporting back to us, and being able to, as a group, help the lawyers that we hired make the best decision, and our client to make the best decision. And the decision was made, we think we're ahead. Mm-hmm. And when you're ahead in a case and you have the chance to rest, you always rest. So we felt as money well spent because they were there if we needed them. So the point of that is, there are times where you will pay an expert, review the case, they will be involved for quite a while, and the judge may issue a motion in limine, which is a pretrial motion to exclude certain evidence from coming in. For instance, a common tactic in self-defense cases is either side to want to have an expert to basically testify that the decision-making tree and the actions of the defendant were either not sound or mm-hmm. or they were sound. Many judges won't allow it because they would say that it's too speculative or it's not there's no real science on that. Really and ultimately, it's kind of more of a tactic type of thing anyway. But we had one of those experts prepared to testify in case we needed them, and we decided that they weren't necessary. In some instances, a judge will say, I'm not going to allow somebody
right.
to get up there and say that. Yeah. And we've had those instances as well, and we're prepared for that in the event it happens, but we also are prepared in the event that the judge allows the prosecution to have somebody get up there and say that the way the defendant used force as an expert, as my expert opinion, was unreasonable. Well, we have somebody prepared to get up there to differ.
Right.
That's right.
I think the big—
Hey, and I want to jump in real quick, Mike.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, because we started this conversation talking about, multiple— having multiple service models, also having CCW Safe and our competitors. But I wanted to, caution some of you who actually do have these, because we've had people complain to us recently, and we already know NRA has been pushed out of New York. Mm-hmm. I've had, probably about 15 or 16 emails in the past, month and a half from members who also have another one of our competitors who, after NRA got an attack there in New York, they abandoned New York, but they didn't tell their members. They're allowing your your subscription or whatever, their membership, to lapse, and then they give you a letter and tell you they're no longer covering you. So if you do have multiple, you know, services, you have CCW Safe and someone else, you might want to give them a call and find out, are you still in one of these states, New Jersey, Washington, California, New York, are you still covering me? Is my coverage still good? Because they're not telling you, and it's really a terrible thing to do.
And you should be able to get a refund on what's not being used as well.
Oh, absolutely.
They're just prorated.
Holding the money until, you know, it's gone, until everything
right.
is done. But that's not right in the way that they're doing business. So make sure you give them a call.
Right.
You know, that's one of the things that we pride ourselves on, you know, other than our, you know, our core values, is having integrity in business. And that's one thing that, you know, CCW Safe is known for, our experience level. We're the most experienced in the nation, not only in these claims, but also our backgrounds. But then we also have integrity and honesty. And it's just something that we bring with us that we had, you know, because of the service industry that we come from in law enforcement. We're used to taking care of people. And that's what we do in CCW Safe. And, you know, shame on the rest of them who are just trying to make money off of this. You know, if you follow us and listen to these podcasts and learn our stories, you'll see that we absolutely believe what we say when we call you guys our family, because that's how we treat you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that we're going to probably end up getting a lot of questions off of this podcast in relation to the captive. Kyle did a real good explanation earlier, and I think that was the main point of this discussion, was to let people know the difference between a captive and an insurance company, and that, you know, CCW Safe has the captive to cover the risk for CCW Safe, and then in turn, CCW Safe covers the risk for our members.
As a membership benefit. Well, one of the things I do think that's important is, not only do we have, you know, reinsurance through reinsurance captives, but the way we have structured our reinsurance is really quite a bit different than the way someone might in the commercial market. And I'll give you an example of that. When you form a captive and you then purchase reinsurance from a reinsurance captive, you have more flexibility than you do if you were like purchasing excess insurance or reinsurance from someone else. Excess insurance is amount that kicks in. It's another policy after the initial policy is extinguished. In other words, if you have $1 million car insurance policy and you have a claim that's going to be a $3 million claim because you hit a bus full of doctors going to a convention, then that case would exceed your $1 million policy, so your excess would kick in. Reinsurance is different. If you can, as an insurance company, insure $1 million of risk, but you can sell off any part of that you want to a reinsurance. And there are first dollar reinsurance policies where the reinsurance company pays a portion of all claims on the when they're first incurred. And there are reinsurance where it kicks in at a certain level. And based on the types of claims, because we have algorithms that collect our data and tell us what the price point is on any given type of claim that we have. So we understand, since we accept so many claims, we have a robust claims history with which to mine and use, you know, technology and use big data to figure out ways we can be more efficient, we can be smarter, we can improve our services, we can improve our quality, and helps us make decisions that drive what content we put out there. And so we use this data, and one of the things that's most important is to ensure that we have the best coverage for you forever is to make sure that it's as stable as it possibly can be. And the most stable thing possible is first dollar reinsurance. And we know that the most expensive claims are going to cap out at a certain amount just based on the way we can assist in managing expenses and resources in the case. We know it's going to cost a certain number. And when you have reinsurance, rather than have our reinsurance kicking in at a higher level, we have it kick in at a lower level that helps us have our expenses and our costs far more predictable.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way we manage our claims, we have never missed a year of getting a reimbursement from the reinsurance because the amounts collected in a premium of reinsurance premium had to pay out so little in claims because of the way we've effectively managed them. So it's an ongoing process that we are doing to collect the data from claims and make sure that the way we are purchasing our reinsurance is the most sound thing financially, that we have as much money as possible and much systems in place to protect what we say, our ability to do what we say we're going to do. So
it's a great point.
And it's sounds trivial, and I know it's probably getting inside baseball on insurance, which a lot of people find, you know, incredibly boring and confusing. But it's important to understand that we didn't just say, let's just go out and start a captive and we'll wing it. We have a lot of people behind the scenes in our relationships and our industry partnerships with captive managers, financial managers of captives, which is a real niche kind of thing for financial managers, and as well as our relationship with reinsurance captives. And anyway, that's kind of what I wanted to specifically mention is there's a tremendous amount of behind the scenes going on that support our ability to provide our membership benefits to all of our members.
No, that's a great point, and I'm glad you clarified that. And I think what I'd like to do is open up for questions from – I know we're probably going to get some and maybe revisit this and have Kyle on again. I think we need to have Kyle on more often anyways.
I have a face made for radio.
For radio. So if you have some questions, send them in. This is going to be a little bit shorter podcast because we've got to wrap it up. But if you have any questions, send them in to either Mike at Stan at or support at ccwsafe.com. And we'll get Kyle back on again.
Look forward to it, gentlemen.
All right, Stan, good to talk to you again, man. You have anything to close it out?
No, I mean, as always, guys, you know, use your heads, think about avoidance, de-escalation. Don't walk yourself or escalate the situation and walk yourself into a deadly force scenario. We're always here for you. We got your back if you're forced to do it, if you're ambushed or anything like that. But just be safe out there, and, you know, we look forward to just having you guys spread the word about CCW Safe and let the other, you know, concealed carriers and those who defend their homes know about us. So share the information, share what we do, share these podcasts, and be safe out there.
It's so important, too, to go to and do a review and like the podcast and give it a 5-star
rating.
Yeah,
definitely share it. So, all right, Stan, we're looking forward to seeing you here in a couple days in Vegas. All right, you guys be safe out there, and we'll talk to you soon.